Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the post-wrestling site, AEW, lighting up the fuse, sit back and enjoy the bubbly. We hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know. Let them know.
Live from the center of the baseball universe, the home of Game 6, Game 7, question mark. Toronto, Ontario, your 2025 World Series.
Maybe 26 too. Maybe
might be a dynasty born, okay? Treya Savage is going to be pitching for us till he's in his mid-40s, which is more than half of his lifespan away.
At the rate that he's moving, I think he'll be in the Hall of Fame by next summer. Okay.
I think so. I'd put him on my ballot this year if I could. I might put him in as a write-in for the modern category.
Has anybody ever done that in 1 year to go from A-ball to the Hall of Fame? Maybe he will.
Is that true? He's gone from A-ball to the... Because I think Dan Shulman only told me that about 150 times last night.
Well, listen, you need your talking points, okay?
I've heard a lot of Dan Shulman and Buck Martinez. Throughout. Man, are they like just a bit better or totally better than the U.S. alternative? Because I've listened to both.
So I don't get Sportsnet. I only get the city TV feed, which is Fox.
Oh, you're
so I don't
out.
Get to hear the Blue Jays home team. And they're just like, all you have to do is listen to, I think their call on that intentional balk from game four. Was it game four?
Where he took third? Yeah.
Game four. Yeah, game four.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Game four.
So they called it right away. They knew exactly what was happening, you know? And it was like, and I feel like the Americans were able to pick it up as well. But I thought like the Canadian team was able to just identify it that much better. So, yeah, I kind of agree. Even just the direction of the cameras, too, they seem to be very different for the Sportsnet feed compared to the Fox feed. And from what I've seen, I've already enjoyed the Canadian feed a lot more.
Oh, the Canadian feed, dude, they found every sad Dodgers fan last night. Like the energy from that stadium was sucked out. Throughout, like game five was the realization of we are probably going to lose this series as like that. This was pretty much a must win game. I feel
for either team,
for both teams. Like this was like to go back, and they're going to Toronto now for the final two games.
Man. Well, I hate to take too much pleasure in it because we've been.
Oh, I have no problem. This team won the World Series last year. They've got the highest payroll in baseball. Cry me a fucking river. I love it. I love it. Cry until you have nothing left.
There's just so many great clips that I think somebody could record and play back for John if things don't go as planned for him. But
you know what? I've had the last month has been utter joy. All right. Even a loss, it will hamper things. It will hamper things.
Well, let's take things back. How did you feel? Did you stayed up to watch the 18-inning game? Yeah, we were texting, of course.
So we were on our text group.
This was Monday night. After we did our review of Raw, barely did a review of Raw because we were watching this game. They were what? That was the end of the 11th, I think, by the time
we think he was even that late. I don't feel like the 9th was even done when we finished the game. I could be wrong, but
I think we're already in extra innings.
Okay. But we pretty much, so this was crazy. It was crazy enough that they were going to have to play 3 games in 3 nights. They played 4 games in 3 nights as they went to the bottom of the 18th. I mean, so here's the deal. It's 2:40 in the morning. And it's the 18th inning, and the Jays get out, and I tap, and I go to bed, and I, really? So I miss I and the middle of the 18th is when I turned it off, I did not feel bad. I did not need to live through the home run at the end. That was a shot to the balls. It hurt, especially because we had that bullshit play at the beginning of the game where. We had, was it a ball? Was it a strike? And then who was it? Bichette gets tagged out at first. I mean, we were robbed, absolutely robbed earlier, but c'est la vie. Dodgers win. It's an unfortunate loss. You did watch right till the very end. Did you?
I did.
Did you shed a tear? I mean, that was a painful loss.
Honestly, dude, that was quite the experience. And the only thing I can relate to it is the feeling of watching a really, really long pro wrestling pay-per-view. Okay? So those people...
Was the length of a typical AEW pay-per-view.
The entire sporting world, at least, could now maybe somewhat empathize with what it's like to sit through, you know, one of these marathon AEW shows. Or like those, you know, back in the day, those like 7-hour WrestleManias. This by the end of it, I think... You're just on edge for so long of it. I thought I'd miss the game. Turns out I watched the whole baseball game, basically, you know, after recording the show. And you're on edge the whole time because any home run, any run, pretty much.
Didn't the Jays go like 7 innings without getting someone on base? Like, dude, look at this. Just like it was a total stalemate between these two teams. Like, it was incredible to watch.
Yeah. It was insane. I've never
like
seen
this is the
like
game
it.
That will be the lasting legacy of this series, barring like the most dramatic of endings in Game 6 or 7. But like historically, this is going to be the game that is remembered.
I think it's the longest game in World Series history.
There was another World Series game that did go 18 innings, but I think by pure length, this one was technically the longest.
Yeah. So that sucked. I mean, it was totally heartbreaking, but.
But when we bounce back, like my concern was we lost and we've got to come back tomorrow. And it was like.
But they did too. And it was
they
Ohtani.
Did too,
it was Ohtani pitching.
Yeah. And Ohtani was a freak of nature in this Game 3.
Mm-hmm.
Game 3, right? Yes. Yeah. That's what we're going back
to. 18 inning one?
Yeah. He gets on base 9 times. Now, 4 of them were intentional walks, which is kind of insane.
Insane considering what he did.
No, not insane. The Jays were totally justified in doing it, but it's a bit of a bullshit way to get around a batter. Like someone suggested that if you intentionally walk someone, the next time they get to go to second, then they get to go to third as a deterrent for just intent. Like it is kind of insane that you can just intentionally walk a guy.
Well,
4 times
you are
in
paying
a
penalty. You're getting a batter on, like you're putting a batter on base. That's a penalty, is it not? In fact, there are plenty of people who think that they should have walked.
Is it a penalty when the comparison is not pitching to the guy who's got 2 doubles and 2 home runs in his at bats prior?
I mean,
like if you could choose, give up a single or just pitch to the guy, you'll take the single.
It's fair. I would say it's at the very least fair. And there are plenty of Jays fans who feel like they should have walked him in the 7th prior to him hitting that home run or whatever it was in the game that took them, you know, to the tying score. I mean, I think it's a fun little technicality in the game that's allowed.
Oh, I have no issue with it, but. I mean, he was, but honestly, the rest of this series, he's been very human. He is not like, he has not shut down this series, save for that game where he was on fire. I would not have pitched to this guy because everything he was hitting was going to result in a run. It was incredible to watch, but like, you know, he pitched fine, but nothing extraordinary. And he's been like insignificant at the plate outside of Game 3. Like he had what, 1 home run? Prior to Game 3.
I don't remember now. I feel like I've lived a lifetime. But certainly last night, he was not a complete... Well, the whole team was
He was a non-entity in last night's game.
The whole team was a non-entity.
I mean, they have done a masterful job of shutting down a lot of their biggest bats. But I will say, Yamamoto scares the shit out of me.
Oh my
and
God.
It's the reason that I am prepared for Game 7. This guy to me is just, his Game 2 performance was just like, we are not hitting this guy. And I don't know. I would love to see them wrap it up on Friday, but I feel we're getting Game 7.
I think there's a very good chance as well, but honestly, you never know. I think I don't know. I feel my whole tact as a fan is to just expect the worst. And
that is bred into us as Torontonians. Always really, expect the worst. And Game 7, I will be a lot less cocky than I am today. But
this 18 inning game would have been amazing because he was warming up right as
his number called for it.
That's right. Yeah, right as Freeman hit that home run. So he could have come out to pitch the rest of that game. Inning 19 would have been him, I think.
They were saying that if they had totally run out everybody, that Mookie Betts could have pitched for them, which would have been...
Yeah.
Could you have imagined?
I've never seen that before. I've never seen a game go this long to the point where, like, players would have to pitch, but I think that's the rule, is it not?
Yes.
That's insane to me. Yeah.
I believe I have seen it before where a position player has had to pitch, but I don't recall the specifics off.
Oh, that would have been so awesome.
I mean, this series has just been, it's been so amazing. Like, these two teams they're terrific. Like, whoever wins, I am not going to begrudge whoever wins. I have had so much enjoyment watching this series.
Suck.
It would suck. But what are your plans for Friday evening, Wei? You're going out for...
We're doing Halloween. Yeah, which is the initial reason why John and I decided to take a Rewind to SmackDown off. We are doing a special news-only podcast for our patrons earlier in the day, but the evening we will not have Rewind to SmackDown. We'll be back tentatively for Saturday night's main event. We shall see. But yeah, my plan is to do like an early Halloween, you know, with Oscar, and then come back, get him in bed, hopefully by 8:30, and then start the game usually at 9 o'clock, a bit later than... usual catch up.
Is Lucas going as Udo Ice?
We might dress him up as
he'd be a very adorable Udo Ice.
A Udo Ice? Okay, sure. Yes, that's right. Yeah. What about you? What are your plans?
Same. We're going trick or treating, and then I'm coming home to watch the game. That's the plan. I'm hoping we'll be wrapped. Like, trick or treating will be done by 8:30.
This will be the quickest night of Halloween in Toronto ever. Okay, a lot of parents are going to be like rushing their kids to these houses just so they can get home and watch this game.
So one other story was, so I think I told this, but my wife got into the queue at the beginning of the World Series, and just it was like if she could get through. She got through. She didn't try to get Game 6 tickets because it was going to be Halloween, was not going to be a game we could go to. She got in the queue and got through to Game 7 to buy tickets. And she was like, do we buy them? And they were like $1,200 for 500s. And I debated it.
Sorry, each?
$1,200 for two tickets.
Okay.
So $600 each.
That's that. What a bargain.
I couldn't justify it. I was like, I can't spend $1,200 and it's not something that we even like bring our kids with. So I was like, no. But her friend did want the tickets. So she bought two tickets and gave them to her friend to buy for $1,200. I went on yesterday. Those same tickets now in the 500s, the cheapest seats in the 500 level for one ticket. What do you think it's going for?
In the 500s.
Yes, one ticket. And this may vary.
$800.
$2,700.
For one ticket?
For one ticket.
So how much do you regret not getting those tickets?
I mean, there's a portion of it. I mean, that would have paid off really well. I mean, what would you have done in that situation? If you had bought Game 7 tickets, and Game 7's going to happen, and you had spent $1,200, but you could get like $5,000 for them. I think I'm still going to Game 7.
I think I'm going to. Yeah, that's a tough one. It is a tough one.
I wouldn't sell. Yeah.
No. Did you see some of these like watch parties? They look just as fun sometimes.
Dude,
you know?
I looked on for Game 5. I considered going to the Rogers Center to watch it when we didn't have to do the show. Sold out. Sold out for the watch party.
Yeah, so for people who are completely lost, for these away games, they actually
open up the Rogers Center, and it's, I don't know how much it is, like it's not a crazy amount to buy them.
It was like $15.
$15 times like 50,000, like that's,
they could charge a lot more than $15. I mean, movies cost $15, you know, and this was way better than a movie.
I didn't even realize, like, even if you take, say it's like $500, the cheapest ticket for a Jays game in the World Series, and obviously they go way higher than that, you're talking $20+ million gates here. Like, they're probably hauling in $35 million a game in ticket revenue, say nothing of like the merchandise that, I swear to God, if you walk in Toronto right now, you will see, it's just a sea of blue and white everywhere. There is Jays merchandise attached to everyone. Yeah. It's incredible what this franchise is making right now.
Oh, totally. And like, you're also seeing a lot of people post like their old ticket stubs from like the 93 World Series, and the ticket prices on those are like $32. You know, so they were not charging this amount, even including inflation, you know.
CBC tracked down the guy that ran onto the field when Joe Carter hit his home run. Uh-huh. He was like some he's now like a high school teacher. And they interviewed him and they asked him if, well, will history repeat itself? He's like, absolutely not. I was sitting fifth row for that game six. $130 I paid for my ticket.
Yeah. Wow, for the World Series.
130 for a fifth row in the 100s for game six of the World Series in 1993.
No, that's not happening ever again. So, I mean, listen, it's this is why, like, it's so important, I think, for these teams to do well. And I'm not the first to say, oh, well, I'm not happy that Rodgers is making all this money. But at the same time, after watching this Expos documentary, you understand how much money maybe is required to run these sort of things, you know, to upkeep the stadium and all that. And you know, that's on some level, you hope it's going back to these things, and that it provides, you know, a longer life to this team and their success in the future.
Well, I guess we will see where things go. Your official prediction. How does this series end? In how many games? And who is the victor?
Okay, at this point, if you're asking me, I'm feeling Jays in six.
Jays in six.
Yeah, I'm feeling it.
I'm saying Jays in seven. It's my thought.
God, it would suck if they lost in seven. How sad.
I'll be way more iffy if they have to go to seven. Like, that's going to be a pressure cooker if they're going into the seventh game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'd be way more nervous if, like, it was game seven and Yamamoto in game seven. I'm at least happy we're getting rid of this guy in game six. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to worry about him in game seven. Because there's no other Dodgers pitchers that I'm... And they've got a tremendous starting five. Mm-hmm. But to me, Yamamoto has been the killer of this rotation. So I can... At least we withstand him in game six, and I feel confident we can hit off any of their others in game seven. And their bullpen is of no consequence. I'm sorry. Their bullpen is just not a very lethal force that we're dealing with.
You think George Springer comes back? We've been doing fine without him.
I wouldn't be...
But I hope
because he would probably DH if he comes back. Like, this guy's knee, if you've seen some of his swings, like, I'm prepared. Like, this guy's ACL is about to turn out, because he's basically on one leg since he took this fastball to his kneecap at like 96 miles per hour. And seeing this guy, like, his leg has like given out several times as he swung. Like, this guy is being held obliques. Together.
It's his obliques that are the issue right now.
Well, this guy, it does not seem like, at best, you want him as a DH, which, I mean, how you adjust a schedule. Honestly, like, Bichette, I think, has been a nice addition. Like, the games that he has been in, like, he's not a difference. He's not been tearing it up. But I'll say Springer gets in if we go to seven. I feel he doesn't play Friday. That's my guess.
Okay. Well, let's see.
All right, we'll see. And if they lose, we'll never talk about this again. I'm honestly, when this is over, regardless, I'm really going to miss baseball, because this past month has been so enjoyable.
Yeah, like, I'll just kind of speak for myself and probably for John as well. Like, you know, remembering those 92, 90, 93 teams was such a major thing for my childhood that, like, I think it probably, well, certainly inspired me to, like, pick up a baseball bat and glove and actually play myself. And I'm sure it did the same for you and many people that are our age. So hopefully this is doing that for people in the city for that are, you know, like 10 or however old.
Did you get into this much in, like, 2015 and 16?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty into it. Like, you and I are the token bandwagoners, but...
Oh my God, totally. Yeah. Well, come on.
We're the reason that there's a difference, okay? You want to make all this money, you got to attract people like us, okay?
I need some sort of payoff, okay? I need some sort of promise. I'm not investing, like, you know, my whole time into, like, all this stuff. I'm just tuning in for WrestleMania season, basically. Yeah.
I hope all you Maple Leaf fans can enjoy this, okay? Because this is all you're getting. On that note, we move on over to Fright Night Dynamite.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holidays are fast approaching, but why not get your shopping done early and actually enjoy it? Uncommon Goods makes your holiday shopping easy and fun with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. I found this super cool Starry Night Air Fort. It's basically a blow-up fort covered in glow-in-the-dark stars. You just hook it up to a box fan, and in less than a minute, you have this awesome little space for the kids to play, or even for grown-ups to sneak in and have fun. It's lightweight, easy to pack away, and really great for relaxing or imaginative play at home. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting small businesses and artists, and with every purchase, they even give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. So shop early, have fun, and cross those names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
From Edinburgh, Texas. And what a Halloween-themed show we got. With costumes, with a grand reveal at the end of the night. We had Excalibur and Bryan Danielson dressed up here at the Burt Ogden Arena. 3,030 tickets distributed, according to WrestleTix. And we're starting off with a tornado tag with Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy against Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia. Man, this match. Darby early on seats Yuta on a chair and hits this insane tope to the floor, just crushing this chair with Yuta seated in it. Then they brawl into the crowd, coffin drop off the bleachers, and Yuta brainbusters Cassidy onto the barricade. And we just continue here at an incredible pace. Multiple tornado DDTs by Cassidy to both, and then it's a transition to a guillotine by Garcia, but they roll to the floor while the hold is still applied. Darby rolls the skateboard toward Daniel Garcia, challenging him to use it, and as he leans over to pick up the skateboard, he's hit with the code red by Darby. And then after a diving DDT by Cassidy, coffin drop is hit by Darby onto Yuta. Garcia's in for the save and then gets knocked off the apron by an orange punch. Soul food by Yuta is hit to Yuta. And then a scorpion deathlock is applied by Darby, tapping out Yuta in 11 minutes and 23 seconds. I thought this tag match was spectacular. And this Darby-Orange Cassidy duo and Garcia-Yuta for that matter. I thought everyone was excellent here, but Darby and Cassidy, this is like your latest example of two guys that if they are not in a big title picture or a big singles program, these guys are a hell of a team. I thought this tag match was just so great.
Well, certainly like Brodito has shown that there's probably like an infinite number of like great tag teams that are there just waiting to be paired together from your AEW roster. Everybody is so strong, and it only makes sense that like pairing two of those guys together would result in something really, really special. I mean, all four of them, I thought this match was a great showcase of like your four of your AEW originals. And that's just to say like guys who have never spent time in the WWE. I thought like the dynamic between Yuta and Garcia would be more as like rivals within the promotion, since like they're both kind of vying for that junior spot in the Death Riders. But I never really considered the plan for them to be to have them potentially work together as a tag team, which I really enjoyed here. Like, I thought Yuta was great in this.
Yuta was really, really good in this match.
The crowd already hates him. He's got like sort of a Dominic Mysterio, Don Callis type of thing going for him, and he's able to play with that energy pretty well in these sort of matches. And in being paired with Garcia, it kind of makes Yuta feel less like the whipping boy, you know, because like when he's in there like tagging with Claudio or Pac, like he's the obvious guy to take all the beatings. But when he's in there with Garcia, he's more of an equal, and therefore he can kind of like show a bit more offense and kind of kick ass and be taken a bit more seriously. So I really like that. I hope they keep them together as a team. And Darby and Orange, I think, as always, like they're so consistent in delivering the type of like spectacle and just risk in Darby's case that you'd expect from out of them. And despite this being a no opening match, that was no different in here. Like, this was wrestled like a main event. It was fantastic.
Great, great tag match to start things off. In the back, Hook arrives in a D12 shirt.
Yeah. How old was this guy when D12 were around, a bit?
I think he was like 2 years old when like Purple Pills came out.
Yeah.
If that. And it was the first of many appearances by the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man in the back, as I call back, I think, to the first year that they did a Halloween show, and other people in outfits that would have a payoff at the end of the night. And he says he won't let Samoa Joe win tonight, and you showed who you really were, but I already knew.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was our chance to, first of all, tie up a bit of a loose end to see Hook's reaction to the Ops heel turn, because of course they have their own history. I mean, last we saw them together, they had kind of made up. Joe, in fact, had said, "We've always got your back." Well, don't think that necessarily applies anymore because they're on opposite sides. We also haven't really heard Hook cut a promo like this in a while, since he's been paired with Eddie, who has kind of acted as like his group's mouthpiece. So this was our chance to see where Hook is currently at as a promo. And I have to say, I don't know if I've seen much improvement from him in this department over the past several years, you know, despite being paired with the Ops. I guess he's been out for a long time, but you would hope that, you know, while even injured, he would have been able to improve a little bit as a promo. And I don't think he has really much at all.
Maybe his promo style could have gone a little more to the tune of cool, calm, just like my mom, with a couple of Valium inside her palm. It's Mr. Mischief with a trick up his sleeve to roll up on you like Christopher Reeves.
Ooh. Is that Eminem or another member of
D12? Purple Pills. Yeah.
Who's lines?
Oh, these are all Eminem's lines, and the other D's would just hang out in the background.
Got it. Right.
Do you remember what the radio edit was for Purple Pills?
Purple Hills. Yeah.
Renee speaks with Don Callis, and tonight he will show that the family has never been stronger. The Young Bucks walk in, and Callis calls it criminal what AEW has been doing, and he has gotten a special entrance arranged for them. So the Bucks go to make their entrance to their EVP entrance that Callis has souped up with giant pyro that the Bucks are looking impressed. So could the Don Callis family be adding more in-laws?
Well, the answer is always yes to that question. But these two in particular, I don't think so. I think this is just a way of maybe having the Bucks turn them down to fully turn babyface.
Well, this is our first four-way. The Bucks, FTR, Jetspeed, and Jurassic Express. Winners get to challenge Brodito at Full Gear. Big Stoke is on commentary, and Jack Perry hands his knife to Danielson, to which Danielson says, "Well, I might need this for Big Stoke." It's like, gonna knife the guy? Like, this was quite something.
Would Danielson, Brian Danielson, I'm sure would own a knife for something, for some utility, but hunting would not be one of those utilities.
I'm sure this guy is a whittler. I'm sure
a whittler. Yes.
So early on, Bailey does his rapid fire kicks to Dax, and Bucks and FTR, they form an alliance early, but that would fall apart. All of them are on the floor. Dax superplex Knight onto everyone, and Knight is clutching at his knee, and he's down for a while, but would make his return into the match. Luchasaurus, who was just excellent in the this guy has come back with a certain added spark, I feel. Like his awesome. His hot tags, like he has been great, I think, in this reunion with Jack Perry. Like he stood out to me more than Jack Perry in this return.
I don't disagree. I mean, you know, part of it is because they're keeping him, you know, for those hot tags. But yeah, he's been spectacular. And I think both with, well, certainly with him, probably a lot of pent up aggression from being injured and just being in a role where he couldn't do these sort of things.
So FTR and the Bucks are alone, and then Luchasaurus takes all of them down, choke slams Nick onto Matt. Perry comes in with a destroyer onto Nick, and then Bailey lifts up Jack Perry onto his shoulders on the edge of the apron. Knight does this huge drop kick, sending Perry off the shoulders and backflipping onto everyone on the floor. Just insane here. Bailey with a top rope acai moonsault to the floor as Knight hits a springboard splash onto Luchasaurus for a two count. And then the Bucks come in. It's a super kick party to everyone, and including FTR. And they proceed to hit a shatter machine onto Cash Wheeler, BTE trigger to Knight, but he kicks out. And then Knight comes back, UFO splash onto Matt, but then is hit with the shatter machine, and Dax hits Knight with the cover in 13 minutes, 42 seconds. So FTR will challenge Brodito at Full Gear, which should be a... I think that'll be a really good match on an AEW pay-per-view. I'm going to enjoy that come hour five.
You know, just when you thought like the first tag match on the show was already like spectacular. I mean, they give you another really, 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 really strong one here. I thought this was another great showcase of their, you could maybe say tag division proper here, you know, with four actual teams. And I mean, I think you see these two matches back to back.
They should have two tag divisions, the tag team propers and the and the just
the makeshift,
the makeshift division.
At this point,
that have never teamed up before that compete each week.
Very much unlike the WWE, this is actually a promotion that could justify having like two proper sets of tag titles. And I'm not talking about the Ring of Honor. Well, who do they have Ring of Honor tag team?
Yes.
Who are they? Right.
The ROH tag champions are, I'll have to look it up.
Anyway, like this is a show on AEW proper that I think they could actually justify having two sets of tag titles because it's so deep and like the talent is so, so, so strong. Not that I'm advocating for that at all, but like it's just, I'm just saying there are so many great teams and I thought this was
It's LFI. I forgot what they did after Dustin got hurt, but yeah, it's Guevara and Rush.
Thank you. So, like you mentioned, John, I think Jurassic Express just feels so renewed and exciting to watch. I thought like they were the team with the most momentum of all four of them. And I like them now more than I did even back during their first run. And I think so much of it is just...
It doesn't feel like a retread, like they're going backwards. Like it does feel like there's a certain freshness to it, whether it's like Jack Perry's a very different character than the last iteration. Luchasaurus has been off for so long because of his health issues, but both seem pretty invigorated by this. And I think that they've been like a welcome addition to this tag division that largely has been contingent on these other three teams for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
in the
you know,
Syndicate.
So Jurassic Express didn't win here, but I still hope that the focus is on pushing them towards an eventual tag title, at least challenge, if not a title win, because I think there's still a lot of momentum behind them right now. Jet Speed are sort of in a position where like, they're just, you know, they're the team that's put out there to have a great match, but lose ultimately. But for people in those roles, there are about as great of, you know, like maybe high caliber jobbers as you can really hope for. And the Bucks, I thought like just that super kick party sequence was, I think, my highlight of the entire match. So creative, so quick, so well timed. And yeah, Brodito versus FTR, that it's a pay-per-view quality matchup on paper for sure.
And you can look at, you know, we look at like Brodito, like if this was always the plan. Like, you've gotten a bit of a run out of them now as tag champions, but FTR winning these belts, like having a solid heel act as your tag champions, and you can work with Jurassic Express, you can work with Jet Speed if you end up doing a Bucks turn, and of course you have like Copeland and Christian in the background that you could get to that as a tag title match whenever they bring those two back.
What do you do with Brodito though? If you,
I'd still keep them in the mix because that's something that really works, and I would hate to split them up at this point. Like, I think Bandito is better served in this tag role on AEW proper and can still do his big singles matches in ROH, and he can do the occasional big, like we just saw with Okada. But I would want to keep those two attached together in some form.
Yeah.
Don Callis Family Summit. I would say what, half the family was here. They note that everyone is here except those due to travel issues and injuries. So we're not at full strength.
So I almost took this to be not this particular scene here, because how many members did we get? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Seven.
Yeah.
3, 5, 8. 8 plus Callis.
8 plus Callis. Okay, which we are including. So this was not the full team, but I do feel like we had an official, like, or about as official of a checklist of the members of this team in this segment through the painting.
Correct. Trent's here, right?
No.
Trent's not here. So we're missing Trent. We're Cage, missing three people. Wardlow.
Well, let's just show this damn painting, okay? Because this is spectacular. So on this painting, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 people, including Don Callis. So missing in action is Brian Cage, Trent, and who else?
Is Wardlow
Takeshita.
In the...
Takeshita was missing as well.
Is Wardlow in the painting?
No, he's not. So no Wardlow. No, obviously no Andrade.
Oh, yeah, Andrade. We've all forgotten about Andrade.
Well,
yeah,
I don't even think they're allowed to have him in a painting.
The power of a non-compete, yeah. Anyway.
But no Wardlow, so...
How many abs do you count?
I'm bad at counting, as we can tell.
Some TRT throughout this, it looks like.
This would make a hell of a t-shirt, would not? Would you not wear this, John?
No, I definitely would not. I definitely would not, but I'm sure some would. So Rocky says this is the largest and most dominant faction in wrestling, and that Takeshita is not here due to travel issues, as he reveals the La Familia portrait. Josh throws to a video package, and then Fletcher recites the oath of the Don Callis family.
And which then, is like the Freemason's oath, I believe.
Oh, okay. You've done some research. Very good. And then they get cut off by Takeshita's arrival, and Okada's looking very unimpressed, and the two stand up face to face. Callis says this is a whole group of alphas and this causes friction sometimes. Callis reiterates, I make the decisions. I built this family with you, Takeshita, and you might have been the first one in, but you could also be the last one out, which I think he meant to say the first one out, wouldn't he?
Yeah, because it didn't really make that much sense. I mean, this was supposed to be a threat. And
yes.
Yeah.
You could also be here to the bitter end with me. So he tells Takeshita and Okada to shake hands, and Takeshita reluctantly extends his hand, and Okada is slowly going in, but then gives him the middle finger, and the smile on Okada's face just stole the scene here, and they have to be separated. Okada's just got that shit-eating grin, and Callis says to prove that they can work together, they will team up on Collision, meaning you guys have to... Before you can get on a flight to Japan, Takeshita, you got to stick around for tonight's double taping and face the dangerous duo of Anthony Bowens and Max Caster.
Which team threat. Will break up first?
Yes.
I suppose.
Yes. Yeah. So, man, they're really just milking this one. I think we're going at least until, like, World's End, if not longer, till we get this match.
So, again, like, this big speculation about who Takeshita's opponent is going to be might reveal itself by the end of this weekend, you know, with the end of that Tanahashi show.
I can't imagine that we're not going to get this match in an AEW ring.
I cannot.
One idea could be, okay, we both agree to... Okada puts his unified title up at, like, World's End, and then Takeshita puts the IWGP title against Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. What about that? And they face each other back to back.
Certainly very possible. Yeah. Like, that would be over the course of what? Like a week? How many days separated?
I think it's a week apart. I think January 4th is a Saturday, but okay. It's the week after.
So you're doing a home and home. Well, I guess they're both from Japan, but you're doing an AEW match, and then the next week you're doing a New Japan match, which is very possible. It's still like quite the, I think, effort from AEW to do all the work in promoting a match that, you know, New Japan will be headlining the biggest show of their year with. Although the Tanahashi match, you can argue, might be the actual main event.
It's also such a self-contained one-night match for New Japan to have in its main event, like Takeshita Okada. Like, there isn't, like...
And they don't need to sell the tickets. They've already sold plenty.
Yeah, so it's why I'm not crazy about doing Takeshita Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. I think it feels more like an AEW match. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you also do the home and home thing. Like, it almost does telegraph, like, one win a piece or something to come out of it without, like, a finality to it, which is, there's different ways you can go. But I cannot fathom that you're not going to get the first match in an AEW ring.
Yeah, considering you already have Tanahashi like do the bulk of the heavy lifting for selling the Tokyo Dome, I think you could put one of your own guys in there with Takeshita and really use it as a spotlight for to try to elevate somebody from yourself.
Maybe we'll probably have a good idea coming out of this weekend of where they are going. There was a video package for Olympia setting up her match with Mercedes Moné for the CMLL Women's title that will air on Saturday. Renee interviewed Chris Statlander. She will be there on Collision for Moné and Olympia. And if Moné wants to say anything, say it to my face.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show. Plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Rematch between Jon Moxley and Kyle O'Reilly from last week. One thing I liked that they did in this was the referee was Aubrey Edwards. So you had the ideas like there's no way Moxley's going to strike the female referee like he did last week. And I thought that was like a nice little added touch. Mm. And we start off and Kyle gets his hand smashed with the panel on the desk to affect his grip strength. Kyle hits a big dragon screw, and then Moxley prevents a single leg takedown by turning it into a pile driver, and he goes to a Fujiwara, then to a crossface, and then into a crucifix, and after this wonderful sequence, he then just goes for the eyes, taking a page out of a Cyril Gane. O'Reilly recovers, stomps the heel of Moxley, and then they're trading knees from the tie clinch. Gotch pile driver gets countered as Kyle gets a triangle locked in, and Moxley sells like submission panic better than anyone. It's just like he adds so much intensity.
It's his character. It's his Achilles heel.
Literally here.
Literally.
His heel was being worked upon. Mm-hmm. Kyle gets the toe hold, which Brian Danielson, he is now trying to overtake 25 years of history, turning the ankle lock into its proper toe hold, identification. And I think he's getting there.
If he says so, then maybe we should all adopt it.
So Kyle goes for a pescado, it's Moxley, I believe. Anyway, it ends with Kyle.
It's Kyle. Kyle.
Kyle does the pescado, right? I can't even fathom Moxley doing a pescado, but gets caught in the armbar, and Moxley is seated on the chair after the armbar, and Kyle goes to leap off the apron, but Marina Shafir stands in his way. So Kyle hops to the floor and he applies a guillotine on the floor, a jumping guillotine. So he's got his legs wrapped around Moxley and the count is going, and they end up reaching the count, and the fans are furious at the double count out in 11:49. But Brian Danielson breaks down how Kyle would have been in such a disadvantageous position. If he had let go of the guillotine, he would have been underneath Moxley. And he tried to make it plausible that Kyle would not let go of this guillotine and tried his best here. I did not have that big of an issue with this because I think AEW got so much mileage out of this DQ last week that I was so much more interested in this rematch this week because Kyle's taken a lot more seriously than he was a week ago, and we're obviously going to get another match out of these two. This, to me, has been a great television program for Moxley between, like, this and, I guess, Blood and Guts is his next big match, but it's added so much credibility to Kyle O'Reilly, and there's... We're so used to DQs and countouts being just a way to get out of someone losing instead of it being used as a storytelling device. And I think they have nailed it with these two of using these. And it's all because of the constraints of the rules that will not be a factor in Blood and Guts. There's nowhere for Moxley to get DQ'd or counted out. So I think this has worked really well, and using DQs and countouts to further this.
I've really enjoyed it myself too. And that's probably counter to, like, a lot of the opinion about this sort of finish with the double count out, certainly in the live crowd, which I can
you're
also...
You're always going to get that reaction. Like, that's just in tune, like, a non-finish is you're going to get that reaction.
Yeah. But in the context of this greater story, I actually really continue to enjoy it. I mean, look, you have to think about the context of all of this, all right? Like, on paper, Kyle O'Reilly is a major underdog compared to Jon Moxley, former champion. Kyle hasn't even won a single singles championship here.
This match had, like, it was just a nothing match when it was announced last week. It was just, Moxley's going to run through this guy.
Yeah. Turns out that did not happen. Instead, Moxley had to get out of the match by getting himself intentionally DQ'd. Second match, I'm thinking Mox probably just gets the win back. But instead, Kyle not only manages to, not only nearly beat him again, but I thought took Mox to a legitimate stalemate by basically forcing this double count out because neither of them were able to get back into the ring. To me, like, it feels significant because of the huge discrepancy in the statuses of both men in the company. Mox almost beats everybody. So for Kyle O'Reilly, somebody who you would not picture in this position at all, for him to not only be competitive against Moxley, but to go two matches with Moxley without Moxley defeating him, not even coming close. In fact, quite the opposite. I think it's a huge push for Kyle O'Reilly. And, like, to make an equivalent, this would be like, I don't know, this would be like Anderson Silva in his prime going to draw with, like, a mid-tier...
Bonner.
Stephen Bonner twice. You know what I mean? Like, think about how big of a push that would be for Bonner himself, right? Like, I thought this continues to really legitimize Kyle O'Reilly and his submission game, which I mean, the match itself was... about as, I think, entertaining as their match last week. So I think it's been a great, unique way to build to a trilogy that, to me, hasn't really felt like a cop-out at all at any point.
And if Moxley does get that win in the third match, it's a real accomplishment now, as opposed to if he had just beat Kyle last week and you would never think of the match ever again. Like, now you've actually built it to where the third match will mean something, and it's... To me, it hasn't hurt Moxley one iota, and it's really elevated Kyle now, just out of two matches where you didn't even get a finish in them.
I feel like they should actually have Kyle beat him.
And if they did that, it makes Kyle.
Yeah.
You know? So afterward, it's Shafir that takes out Aubrey Edwards, and the Death Riders attack Kyle. We get run-ins from Roderick. Then Darby, Mark Briscoe, and Orange Cassidy all run out. Darby asks why the Death Riders are running. You haven't suffered enough. Briscoe calls them fake-ass tough guys, and they hand the mic off to a reluctant Orange Cassidy to reveal their plan. Blood and Guts. Which should be the tagline for this particular match that will come up in 2 weeks with the Death Riders against the Conglomeration and Roderick Strong, who is still a detached member of the group. So... there we have it for Greensboro.
I think they've established this pretty well, you know, just given Darby's team ups with the Conglomeration. Like, the Conglomeration on their own, I mean, they're so comedic that you wouldn't necessarily think of them as opposition for the Death Riders just even a month ago. You know, like, Death Riders at this point still very much so serious and so deadly in comparison to this sort of, like, sitcom tag team, right? But with the addition of Darby,
what if they did a remix of that sitcom video with Darby?
And Darby,
he'd be like the Leonardo DiCaprio on Growing Pains.
Was he, like, super brooding and, like, mysterious and dark?
Kind of, yeah. By early '90s brooding,
Darby would be the weird neighbor, like he'd be the Kimmy Gibbler, you know?
Oh, I was thinking of like Al from Home Improvement. No, Al Borland was the guy from who was the guy across the Wilson. You never saw his face. Wilson, that's what I'm thinking.
No, that
Wilson.
Would be like Bandito or something. Like you'd have to pick a luchador for who never shows their face.
Wilson, the original luchador.
Yes. But I've been loving this conglomeration Death Riders build up, and you know, like it certainly adds a level of star power to the Blood and Guts show. That I mean, as excited as I am for the women's version of Blood and Guts, they don't have the star power that you know a Moxley and a Darby would be able to provide. And this whole like story that they're telling of John Moxley just slowly like showing the cracks, you know, in his armor as this like, you know, unbreakable leader of this Death Riders faction. I think has been really well told by John Moxley himself. He's starting to like, well, he's certainly selling a lot more against somebody like a Kyle O'Reilly. He's more vulnerable now than he ever has been in his like current run as part of the Death Riders. And he's showing a lot more fear in his face, even now against the conglomeration. So the booking of this one, I think will be interesting. You know, will it be, a way to finally like break Moxley and perhaps lose whatever faith the rest of the Death Riders still have in him? Or will it be a way to continue to, I guess, reinvigorate the Death Riders perhaps by having them beat the conglomeration and Darby?
So Mercedes gets a hold of Chris Statlander and has attacked her in the back, brings her out to the arena. And as Statlander gets on offense, Athena joins Mercedes, and it results in a backstabber by Mercedes and the O-face, and then Statlander placed into the statement maker. So Monet and Athena are in the tag title tournament together, and they get run out by Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron, who run down to save Statlander, and that match will be taking place next week in the opening round of the tournament.
I thought this was a perfectly fine segment to set up that tag team match, but like they... Like, did I miss something? Or, like, do Willow and Statlander still not have some issues with each other? Like, last I remember, it was, like, Willow saying, like, you still can't trust her or something to that effect. I know, of course, they have the connection through Harley, but...
Yeah, we have not had a resolution between these two.
This just seemed to indicate that they're all friends again, which, I think this at least deserved maybe, like... Willow and Statlander sharing some sort of like suspicious look of each other just to show that there's still some tension, you know?
Well, maybe we missed an Instagram reel.
Yeah, maybe we could have. Yep, possibly.
I like this fact. They showed highlights of Mascara Dorada at All Out with Okada and Takeshita. And then we had this incredible video that they put up on Wednesday of Bandido bringing his grandmother to Dynamite last week to see him wrestle for the first time. She traveled like 12 hours. She was amazing in this video. It's subtitled, "Everyone tells me he's the best." It's like, I could only imagine like the word of mouth that reaches Bandido's grandmother about what her grandson is doing in professional wrestling.
Has she been on Cage Match recently?
She might be. Maybe
she might have a profile.
Maybe she's juicing up his ratings on Cage Match. It was a great video. They need to do more of this kind of stuff. It really does add a lot.
They do a lot of these sort of things, but they're exclusively like online bonuses. So, I mean, oh man, this was so great. Like, seriously, this is the type of thing that no matter what language you speak, we can all identify with the feeling of wanting to make, you know, a grandparent proud or just to like have a grandparent experience. You know, like an accomplishment from a grandchild. Like, it was the type of video that makes you like Bandido just a little bit more. More than, I mean, as great as the wrestling is, you need these sort of out of the ring sort of showcases in order to really flesh out the depths of their character.
Well, she might be called upon down the road when Bandido has a feud with MJF. Because I'm sure an MJF could watch this video and have a lot of fuel.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Julia Hart and Sky Blue teaming against Jamie Hayter and Queen Aminata in the first quarterfinal match of the women's tag title tournament. The winners of this will face the winners of next week's match. And they explain that Penelope Ford has an arm injury and might be out of the tournament and Blood and Guts, which is amazing because we do not have like the full announcement of the women's Blood and Guts match, mm-hmm. nor do we have it by the end of tonight's show, but more to come on Penelope Ford as they would do a segment with her. Chocolate kisses early on by Queen Aminata to Sky Blue. They get the heat on Hayter for several minutes, including going through the picture-in-picture as the Sisters of Sin are double-teaming her. Then it's Blue in and takes a swinging neckbreaker from Aminata, and all four start brawling in the ring. There's lariats by Hayter and Aminata. They go down. Queen and Blue start trading slaps, and then Tekla appears from underneath the ring, spearing Hayter as Hart and Blue lift up Aminata for an assisted Uranagi, and Blue pins her in 10 minutes and 2 seconds to advance in what I thought was a bit of a surprise outcome, because I can't fathom Mercedes and Athena losing in the first round, and I just assumed they'd set them up with the babyface team here with Hayter and Aminata, but instead it's Hart and Blue going to the second round.
Agreed, yeah. I mean, I was surprised too. Although maybe the idea is for like Sisters of Sin to somehow go towards the end where they can face like a Monet, Tony and Mina perhaps. I don't know, but that would require Monet and Athena losing, which is a hard thing to think about right now. I really liked Hayter and Aminata here. I think, you know, the pairing of the two of them on the basis of like both having reputations for hitting hard is really brilliant. And I think a great way for, you know, Aminata to continue to receive like the spotlight based off of like the match she had with Tekla and just again a reputation for hitting really hard, which they both continued to do. I thought they were just so fun to watch here and made the matches look very legitimate and exciting. Like Hart and Blue on the other hand, I think they're fine, but I wasn't really that impressed with them in this match. I thought they were like okay, but I was way more impressed with Aminata and Hayter. And so I was kind of disappointed by the outcome because I, for a brand new team that was just formed, I kind of wanted to see Aminata and Hayter do a lot more.
Yeah. Bit of a surprise. I wouldn't say the match was anything like blow away. To the back we go, and Tony Schiavone dusted off his old Halloween Havoc costume box as the Phantom of the Opera was resurrected here. A wonderful callback for Schiavone fans.
Maybe and he only has a few outfits.
This is probably all he's got. Penelope Ford is shown in a sling next to Megan Bain, and she reveals she has torn her UCL, which that means like Tommy John surgery, which
it's
is
pitcher's injury.
Yeah, this is like the death of any pitcher. This is the Shane Bieber injury that he just came back from. So, yeah. I mean, if presumably needs surgery, obviously that's like a 9 to 12 month deal.
So brutal.
That's a terrible
off of the moonsault from a match last week.
Yeah, very unfortunate. So Penelope Ford is out, and Bane is seeking a replacement when Marina Shafir steps up, and John Moxley is just blown away by this. He had the same reaction as we did for Cassidy and Darby paired together. Like, what a great idea. And so this will be our team to take on Ty Mello and Anna Jay. And I feel like this team has to go at least to the second round to establish them.
For sure. Yeah, which I think Ford and Bane were supposed to anyway. So, I mean, they might rebook the entire thing now that, like, Shapiro is a heavily protected person. So is Megan Bain. And the two of them together, you can't expect them to just lose that easily, right? So you just got to feel for Penelope Ford. Like, after all these years, clearly she worked so hard just to even come back from her last injury. She was finally onto something with this Megan Bain team, and to have that momentum disrupted again is just such a blow, I'm sure, mentally for her as well. So I hope she makes a full recovery and comes back just as strong. But I think Shafir is a really exciting replacement. Like, you're doing this sort of like, well, like sort of like a Road Warriors style of like completely dominant team. And it makes the tournament that much more unpredictable, I would say.
So the collision lineup for Saturday, this is a non-spoiler listing. We have Bandido and Máscara Dorada for the ROH Championship. That should be spectacular. Mercedes Moné and Olympia for the CMLL Women's title. Okada and Takeshita against Bowens and Caster. Bane and Shafir will take on Nixon Newell and Miranda Alize, who debuted on last Saturday's collision. Juice Robinson, Ace Austin, and Austin Gunn against Johnny TV and MXM Collection, and a six-man with Sammy Guevara, Beast Mortos, and Dralistico against Mark Briscoe, Roderick Strong, and Commander, which was all taped last night.
November on the Post Wrestling Cafe will include Rewind Away, looking at some of the biggest retirement matches in pro wrestling history, with selections from All Japan Pro Wrestling, WWE, and Stardom, among others. Plus, we'll have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322 from Madison Square Garden, and the Tanahashi Final Homecoming. John and Wei will be taking all of your questions on this month's installment of Ask Away, and John gets together with Brandon from New Jersey for a Season 4 retrospective of 90210. All that and so much more. Join now at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door. Main event, Samoa Joe, Ricochet, Hook, and Bobby Lashley. Winner challenges Hangman Page at Full Gear. And so you look at this lineup, and you know the crowd is going to pick someone here, and it wasn't going to be Hook. So Samoa Joe became the most over babyface in this match. And yep. they love Joe. They're chanting for him. And they just built up all these showdowns. Like, it was Joe with Ricochet, Joe with Hook, and then the big one, Joe and Lashley, as they squared off midway through the match. Ricochet was unbelievable in this match. We saw Joe and Lashley go face to face as the crowd is going wild, and Lashley hits a spine buster, then catches Ricochet off the top and turns it into a dominator. Hook comes in and manages to suplex Joe, and Ricochet dives onto Lashley, lands on his feet on the floor, runs back into the ring for a Sasuke special to Joe on the other side, and then completes it with a shooting star press onto Hook. Just an amazing sequence by Ricochet. Goes for the spirit gun, and Hook stops him going for Red Rum, which is broken up by a Joe Senton. Goes for the muscle buster to Joe, and he's got to hold him up for a while as Lashley finally spears him, knocking both down. Ricochet immediately hits a springboard 450 to break up the cover, and then Ricochet hits Lashley with a chair. So Lashley goes after Ricochet to explain his absence for the ending here, as Joe gets the coquina clutch onto Hook, and Lashley is too late to get back to the ring, and Hook submits in 11 minutes and 56 seconds. Lashley chases Ricochet to the back. These two, I feel they're going to go for another year.
I think they have a lot left. Yeah. Best of 30, 34, maybe.
There is no ending to this. I think this will be blood and guts next year. The Hurt Syndicate and the growing Ricochet GOA group.
Maybe they'll team up, like all six of them, you know, as like a major faction.
Yeah. Yeah. Point. We need a new 12 man tag titles. Yeah, fun main event here. Joe was kind of, everything was built around, but I thought Ricochet was like the star of this match. He was just incredible.
I thought it was a great match. I mean, to me, this was like Joe being a total baby face here, I think just shows like how much more over he is now that he's a heel. He was already over, but like now, like seeing him completely unleashed with this new personality where he just doesn't give a shit and he's just like an ass kicker just makes him that much more likable. I'm so sorry. And I don't necessarily think it hurts the show. I think like just to have a compelling character, baby face or heel, I think is a benefit to it. And it's good, like, when, more importantly, when he's paired against Hangman,
that's it,
he will still get booed.
It works because the babyface he's up against is not going to get drowned out by Joe. It's not like you have a weak babyface. It's like they're all into Hangman, and in that dynamic, like, this was fine just for like a one-off. It's like, yeah, you could look at this on paper and this would not have been that far a surprise. Like, it's more a sign that like Hook is really, like, this guy was, like, the odd man out in this match in many ways.
He rightfully feels, like, the coldest of the four. And his inclusion is the one that maybe you kind of shake your head at the most. But I thought, like, he had some really fun power spots. It's, to me, more so, like, the stuff outside the ring that I think needs a lot of development with him. But, yeah, Lashley, Ricochet, they were a lot of fun. Ricochet especially was a lot of fun to watch here.
So we go to the post-match, and Tony Schiavone, still in Phantom of the Opera getup, is joined by the ops in the ring, and they're going to do an impromptu contract signing. Has this ever happened before? An unannounced contract signing?
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure.
I don't think this has happened since Gorilla tried to get Wendy Richter to sign a contract on her way out to the ring in 85.
So Schiavone wasn't actually in the ring. You could hear his voice, but Schiavone was speaking from outside of the ring.
I don't think the first half of this, I think that was Tony, and then he leaves the ring, and then it's Hangman that replaces him.
Okay, so he left the ring to what, like get the beers or something?
When the whole brawl broke out,
That's when Tony leaves the ring.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
And
yeah,
when
you
he returns.
Yeah. You have to talk about the marshmallow
first half
man.
Of this. It's Tony in the ring. Yes. So right. He calls out some assistants for this contract signing. And this is all the guys in costume with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and everyone else. Joe is assuming that it's Hangman under one of these costumes. So he sets Hobbs and Shibata to attack. They kill everyone. They unmask the Marshmallow Man, but this time it is not Hangman under the mask. And he says that maybe Paige just isn't that creative anymore. And you know that they're setting up for something big. And she says that at Full Gear, he will relieve Hangman of the burden of being champion. And Shivani at this point is outside of the ring, so you hear his voice. And he calls for a toast. And you see Shivani, or at least what appears to be Shivani, entering the ring, holding up a beer. And if you watch this closely, under the disguise here, Hangman is mouthing the words of what Tony is saying over the speaker. So he was really incredibly done, because I don't think anyone noticed this. And then all of a sudden...
Wait, seriously?
At the beginning of this? Before
you don't
the
think anybody noticed from this point?
Not from this point. And I'm saying when he was doing the speech before
Got
this.
It. I see.
Like once he stood behind him, yes, everyone knew what the play was.
So I love this. It was so ridiculous. But what was the logic here? So it was Tony in on all this? Like it was
Tony is a complete, it's a total conflict of interest on Tony Schiavone's part.
Like, was this a pre-recorded thing that he gave to Hangman? Did Hangman use Tony Schiavone AI to maybe write this himself and then somehow hacked it into this?
I mean, you can get away with that now. That could be Tony Schiavone had no power over any of this.
Hangman just doing like a really, really good Tony Schiavone impression?
I don't think that was the intent to convey, but he reveals that it is Hangman who has usurped the body of Tony Schiavone, and we get the big attack, buckshot lariat to Joe. When he revealed himself, dude, this crowd exploded. They thought this was so cool, and that's how the show ended. I like this. You did not?
I love this.
Okay.
Yeah, I love this. I thought it was like such a bold, like... unmasking, you know, like it's one thing to like reveal yourself as the Marshmallow Man, like you're completely hidden under that giant thing, but like for like a half Phantom of the Opera mask with like the whole thing where they have to like go outside and actually like hear Tony's voice over the speaker, it was so ridiculous, and I thought like so hilarious and so awesome by the time it actually, like, just look at Paige in this wig, you know, it was, I thought, great.
I thought this was a great episode. Really, really strong stuff, in particular from the opening tag, the four-way tag match as well, Kyle and Moxley. You know, the women's tag title tournament match wasn't as much. And the four-way, like, I think it was a very clear-cut winner that you were going to have here, but the crowd was into it, especially behind Joe, and then you got the angle at the end of the show. So overall, I thought this was a really entertaining edition of Dynamite, which both set up your big matches for Full Gear. You've got the men's Blood and Guts match. My only critique would be, like, I don't think we should be waiting till next week to announce all the women for the Blood and Guts match, and you got like a week to build that up.
You needed the results of the tag matches first to lead into it.
Of what tag matches?
Well, several of the members of Blood and Guts presumably are involved in this tag tournament. And they're going
to have
to
be eliminated to be in Blood and Guts?
I mean, they're going to use the tag matches to build to the Blood and Guts feuds.
I mean, this is in 2 weeks. The tournament's not going to be over in 2 weeks.
Well, they'll probably get eliminated before that.
Why do they have to be eliminated? It's not like we're going to have other matches on that show that week. It's two Blood and Guts matches.
That's just the way they want to tell their story.
What's annoying is that, like, it was a month ago that they set out this challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why couldn't we just have announced things like a few weeks ago? Like, I feel like it's redundant.
If you ask Tony, it's probably because he wanted to tell their stories through the tag tournament first.
Well, I don't think they have hyped it all that much more.
Yeah, I think it would have been nice to maybe have some earlier directions too, but I also don't think it really hurts it. I mean,
I don't understand why you have to be eliminated from the tournament to be in Blood and Guts. What does that matter?
It's not whether or not you're eliminated, but there's going to be something that will happen in these matches that'll cause the rivalry to bubble up that much more so that the teams are actually going to be made.
Okay, well, through the events of these matches next week, I guess.
So what, you think these matches are just going to occur with nothing impacting anything else?
Way, this feud has been building for like months. They've been doing all of these tags with all of these women. That's why the challenge was issued by Hayter like 4 weeks ago.
Right.
Yeah. We knew where we were going with this.
I don't think it makes a big difference either way.
Well,
this is how Tony chooses to tell the story.
Okay. Well, week's notice. That's fine. All right. That was Dynamite from Edinburgh, Texas. And we are going to say goodbye to everyone here on the YouTube stream, but we will be back. For members of the Post Wrestling Cafe, Wei and I will be dropping a very rare edition of Talk on Friday, where we will get together and we're going to talk. Are we going to talk some Blue Jays? Is this going to be our Game 6 pregame show? Are we going to go player by player, assess the lineup?
I have no idea. We don't know what we'll be talking about. And everything's on the table.
Okay, I'll look forward to that. And then on Saturday night or Sunday, we will have a Saturday night's main event review for everyone. Also coming up this weekend, we've got Collision Course with Kate from Montreal, joined by John Kleinchester. And Sunday, a Tanahashi final homecoming review from Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson. All of that can be yours, $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com. If you're feeling really, really intrigued, you can jump up. Double-double espresso level. You get book club every month and daily audio news updates. Don't have time to read all the stories. What's making news in the world of pro wrestling? Well, we have your audio news updates coming at you Monday through Friday with my wonderful voice.
Yeah, great job on those, John.
Thank you. All right, goodbye everyone on YouTube. Now we head on over to forum.postwrestling.com.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Gold Belly. Gold Belly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Gold Belly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.